Welcome back to the Hard Landings Podcast, everybody. I'm Nick.
I'm Miranda.
And I'm Christy. And
oh, hey!
I'm sorry that Nick just yelled at you.
Here's your September listener episode, the last half week of September. Yeah. We wanted to wait to make sure everybody got their stuff in first, because we knew, David, you slowly got stuff in over the month.
Yeah,
and I was like, we need to wait until he's done.
It was great. And we actually have quite a few stories this month. So.
We do. We have a lot. So thank you, guys. Also, precursor, this is going to be a relatively somber episode, because the main theme was memories of 9/11, or 9/11 remembrance.
Or where were you when?
Yeah, so just, this isn't like the happy-go-lucky stories that you may be used to. Sorry in advance.
Anyways.
So I'm starting today with our patron, Kate. She uses she, her, and they, them pronouns.
Thank you for normalizing pronouns.
She's from California. Her story is entitled September 11th as a 9-year-old. So you were 4 years older than me at the time. Me and Christy.
Yes.
And 3 years older than Nick.
Yes.
Where was I on September 11th, 2001? I was at home asleep at the age of 9, blissfully unaware that much was about to change. The time change between New York and California helped isolate me personally as a child. At least for a little while. I was oblivious to the attack as I got ready for school with my sister before Mom drove us the short distance there. Things seemed fine upon our arrival. I chatted with my friends while we waited out front for the doors to open so we could go to our classrooms. We, as students, only began to notice that something was wrong when we faced our teachers for the day. In my K-8 school, there were no class changes, so you stayed with your one teacher the whole time. Mrs. Shu was my fourth grade teacher, and she seemed to be barely holding it together. She spent a lot of the day on the classroom phone talking to someone we didn't know or crying. At some point, another teacher came in to cover for her. I did not find out until I spoke to my mom later in the day that Mrs. Shu had a family member who worked in the World Trade Center. Ooh, that just gave me chills.
Yikes.
Ooh. I want to say it was her father, but I legitimately could not remember. I also do not remember if said family member survived. Her reaction to the disaster scared us, and her fear fed ours. We didn't know what happened, we didn't know where it happened or when, and we didn't know why it happened. The school tried to protect us from the goings-on outside to keep us from being scared, but it didn't work. We could tell the adults were afraid and that something was very wrong, though they wouldn't tell us what at my age. I heard some of the upper grades had the news running on TV for part of the day, but I'm not sure if it was the truth or a rumor. I had a math teacher let us watch the broadcast of Michael Jackson's funeral in class while we did homework instead of holding a lesson, so it was not beyond the realm of possibility. It was much later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that happened in like 2011 or something, because we were in middle school when it happened, so... Anyway, at the point taken, I understand your point. The day ended, and tense parents retrieved us from tense teachers and likely tried to think of a way to explain recent events to their young children. When we came home, my dad was in a state. He'd been watching the news all day since it related to his work. Given his position in the corporate reaches of a bank, he kept East Coast hours in order to do business with New York and North Carolina. He knew people in the World Trade Center and spoke to them often. I do not know if he lost friends and long-distance coworkers that day, but it is possible. He wouldn't tell me even if I tried to ask. My parents had a large fight that evening when the nightly news was set to come on. Mom wanted to watch it since she'd been at school all day as a teacher's aide, trying to shield the students from this terrifying new reality. She wanted the details since she'd already had to put up with my 9-year-old self and my younger sister peppering her with questions since we knew something was up. Dad, on the other hand, wanted nothing to do with the news since he had been bombarded with it all day. I hid outside for a while and played with bugs to try to ignore their yelling. When things quieted down, I went back to doing my homework. We did not end up watching the news until after my dad went to bed that night. My mom, my younger sister, and I watched it together. We learned what happened, but I didn't quite actually understand what happened until later. I was little. The whole gravity of the situation did not sink in until I was older. Thanks for reading. I know this is super long and might be a little funky to read. I did my best to recall the day, but the memory is fuzzy due to time and my age during the event. It is strange to think I am now very close to the age a lot of the teachers in my school were then. Yeah, that's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. They seem so much adultier than I am, but that could just be perspective. I do not know how they held it together as well as they did, for the most part, but they did. I'm not sure if I could do the same, and I'm legitimately do not want to find out the answer. Kate. I don't either, Kate.
Nope.
Yeah. Our next story is from David. He put in, he, man, macho, civilian, skydiving, scuba diving, egotist, black smoker in the Mid-Atlantic Rift. And his story was titled JFK.
Ah.
We were living in Fort Worth, Texas the day JFK was shot. Dad was working at Convair, now known as General Dynamics, just one of the many aerospace corporations he would quit. I was watching the Mickey Mouse Club, no doubt staring at Annette Funicello. This is according to my mom. As I was only 2 at the time. That's the whole thing.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure he sent us that one because we told him.
Yeah.
To send us that one.
I don't know. Did we talk about JFK at any point?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure he's just sending us stories anyways.
Yeah. My mom was like, you're like triangulating your age, David. But my mom was 2. My mom was also 2 when it happened. Yeah.
Okay. Our next story is from Joseph.
Joseph.
Who is, he did not list this, but I know he's from Trinidad and Tobago. And he uses he, him pronouns.
Hey, Joseph.
Thank you for normalizing pronouns.
Thank you.
And his story is entitled Adventures in Rerouting. Hi, guys. I don't know if this will fit in any of your themes, but it is an aviation story and one which showed the best of customer service from an airline. Warning, it will sound like an advert or fan personism.
Hey, okay. It happens.
From my previous stories, which are certainly in no way as amazing as David's, you will gather that I love flying and aviation in general. I don't really have a favorite airline, as they all have their benefits and quirks. Caribbean Airlines, code BW, is no different. It is the national airline of Trinidad and Tobago, where I'm from. The current fleet is 6 737-800s, soon to be replaced by MAXs, and 6 ATR-72s, used for the air bridge between Trinidad and Tobago domestic route and island hopping in the Caribbean. I must admit that flying CAL, and being biased, it is always refreshing to hear a Trini, short for Trinidadian, accent from the cockpit welcoming you aboard. The flight attendants are also mostly Trinidadian, with some Jamaican from a merger with Air Jamaica some years ago, so the cabin always feels Caribbean in tone. Come to think about it, they do have Jamaican pilots, but I've never heard one make the in-flight announcement. The Trini accent has been on the top sexiest accents on CNN's list, but that's another story for another podcast. Airside service is quite good, but nothing really special. Maybe equal to JetBlue. I don't really have a preference because I travel on whichever airline has the cheapest ticket to my destination.
Same.
Same?
Yep.
Usually Frontier. Several airlines, both charter and commercial, operate out of Piarco, Trinidad, to destinations in Florida. Anyhow, with that background out of the way, this is where the story begins. The date was an infamous one, January 6th, 2017. A major historic but sad day for Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport, or FLL.
Oh, yeah. Keep going.
I boarded a CAL 737-800 at Piarco, Trinidad, bound for that airport. I was on my way to a friend's wedding in Fort Lauderdale. I've always liked Fort Lauderdale more than Miami. Same.
Yes.
We usually, when we fly to Florida, we go to Fort Lauderdale.
If we can. Yep.
I hate Miami. Miami is exciting, alive and large, but is not really a fun airport. Yes, I am aware. As a child, I liked Miami, seeing all the planes as we taxi past and different people in the terminal with their various accents. As an adult, I can appreciate using some other Florida airport to enter the state, particularly from an international destination. Miami is huge and a maze to get from the gate to the pickup. At immigration, there is always someone shouting, "No cell phones!" and other instructions, which is mildly amusing to quite annoying, depending on how the flight in went. Airport 24/7, Miami on Travel Channel did introduce us to one of those officers, giving her a human perspective, but it's no less annoying.
Yeah, we could watch that sometime. I've seen a couple episodes. It's pretty good.
As always, the takeoff from Piarco was smooth and scenic, passing over the lush northern range of Trinidad and seeing the beautiful north coast beaches. Not really biased here. See link for pictures, which we will put in the show notes.
Sure.
Assuming the link is still here. As the aircraft vectored north, the flight up the Caribbean was, again, as always, smooth. Blue Caribbean skies with a few clouds here and there. 4 hours later, more or less, the announcement for landing was made. South Florida and its sprawling metropolis is always a sight to see. I remember when some of those incorporated cities around Miami were just swampland. It occurred to me that, thank heavens, we were not landing in Miami, but Fort Lauderdale. Could I be more wrong? It's now about 1:15 p.m. We are descending into a straight-in landing. No delays. Good. Suddenly, the aircraft begins to rise. The aircraft is vectoring away from Fort Lauderdale. The captain comes on the intercom. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been informed that Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, is closed. We will be making a landing at our alternative, Miami International. First thought, groan. Second thought, gosh, what happened? Air crash? Now, the cabin is becoming alive with activity. Someone switched on their cell phone and it connected. In Trinidadian accent and Trini English, it has a shooting in Fort Lauderdale. That's why the plane can't land there. That is exactly how he wrote that. I'm not trying to mock it.
Nope.
The plane is now over the Everglades, turning to Miami. I've never been in an aircraft coming into Miami from the western side. The Everglades is such a stark green that suddenly just turns into civilization.
Yeah, it's literally like a straight line.
Yep.
City.
I've noticed it on flights to Orlando and other flights over Miami, but being lower now, it was just magnificent. So in we come to Miami. Amazingly, a straight in. Considering the closure of Fort Lauderdale, I was surprised. As always, there's a very long taxi. One strange thing this time, every single ramp is filled. Usually Miami is busy, but I don't think I've seen this many filled slots. We taxi and taxi, past all sorts of airlines. We make a port or left turn. Well, at least it's at a jet bridge. Imagine if it was a remote stand, then to be bused to the terminal. I think that would be cooler, personally.
I don't know. It's here nor there.
Coming into that ramp, I'm sitting to starboard. What do my eyes behold but a Lufthansa A380?
Cool.
Wow. This magnificent beast herself. This is my first time this close. Those engines. The height. Again. Wow. Of course, I got out my cell phone and turned it on. I managed to get a few shots as well. Then it hit me. A380 equals 500 passengers if full. Or more. Groan again. But still, the view is epic. Getting out of the window seat, I managed to look on the other side. An Austrian Airlines 777. Another 300-plus passengers. Darn. As expected, the walkway was super crowded. Several other wide bodies were also on the tarmac. Was it luck that a 737-800 managed to get a jetway parking spot? I've heard about Miami's remote stands being very far. Luckily, never had an aircraft parked there. Moving to immigration, I've never seen the hall this full. I've seen it busy, but not absolutely jam-packed, crammed. As always, quite a mix of people and languages are in line. And as usual, comes the shout, "No cell phones! Don't use your cell phones here!" Several of the Europeans, based on the passports they were holding, were on their phones. Several other languages began shouting the same instruction, but amazingly only in English. What about the European languages? Did Miami forget announcements are usually made in Spanish first, then English? I mused. While in the line, I'm now calculating how to get to Fort Lauderdale. Trying to remember the layout of Miami, where the bus stops were, thinking about Uber, Lyft, and the other services, or if it may be worthwhile to rent a car. I don't usually do this in Florida because Uber or Lyft is quite affordable and available.
There's also a train that runs through the two airports, isn't there?
Yep.
There is, but it's changed over the years.
But we went in 2017, didn't we?
Yes.
Yes.
So it was available.
Yes.
We took that train, I'm pretty sure, in 2017.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
Or was that 2018?
I don't know.
18.
18, because I graduated with my bachelor's in
Anyways,
18.
Yes, anyway. There is a train. There's several trains, actually, but yes.
Obviously, this doesn't matter to you now. It's a moot point. Clearing immigration was the longest I've ever had at any airport, which was understandable. I was ferried into a shorter queue to the agent. Her supervisor came up to her and said, "You can have your break after the last passenger line." Guess who that was? He came around and blocked off the rope. There were 10 people in front of me. I've honestly never seen an agent stamp passports and get fingerprints that quickly. Now on to baggage collection and customs, which is another adventure in Miami on a good day. The baggage hall is, again, very crowded. I find my carousel with the easily identifiable yellow duffel bag I use on these short trips. You already know my adventures coming back from Margarita with the alcohol stash.
Yep.
Approaching the area for customs, I see many people walking out a door I know is always closed. It is, in fact, open this time. Again, being cautious because of my last name, I approach it and see that it opens directly into the airport proper. To hell with it. I exit too. Wow, that worked. On the unsecured arrivals level at Miami now. The time, however, is almost 5 p.m. Now, you will note I didn't talk about any announcements on the aircraft about how we would get to our final destinations. I deduct a star for this. Probably can't really blame the flight crew because ground operations may not have relayed this information to them. Anyway, I try to get my bearings. The first thing I do is look at my phone. Damn, it was on and network connected. Good thing it did not ring. Trying to turn on the Wi-Fi, guess what? It rings. That was good timing. Having finished the conversation and assuring the person on the other end I was fine and not in Fort Lauderdale, I turn on the Wi-Fi. Miami International is good Wi-Fi, but limited to 30 minutes. One reason I usually have several smart devices transiting through Miami. Bing, 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 WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, Line, Signal, and all the others. Can I answer all this in 30 minutes? I look for the priority ones and will answer the others when I get to the hotel. Trying to get my bearings, I look around for information. The booth has quite a line. I decide not to join. My friend and I decide to make our way one level down to the CAL desk. At the very least, they would have some information on how we can get to Fort Lauderdale. This is where the airline actually amazed me. The CAL operations is a small one. There were a few check-in counters compared to the larger airlines with sprawling lanes. It is almost very easy to miss if not for the noticeable, what are they, neckerchiefs? The staff wear. Ascots?
Yeah. Ascots.
Two of the lines were marked with Fort Lauderdale on them. Wow! We joined the line. Approaching the counter, the agent asked if Fort Lauderdale was our destination. I answer yes. She says they will give us a voucher to take a minibus one level up directly to our hotel. I thank her and say, good job on you guys and CAL. She responds by thanking me for that and says they will have plenty of work to do rerouting people tonight. I know this is no small feat. CAL had, I believe, two flights daily from Puerto and a few from Kingston, Jamaica, to Fort Lauderdale. We make our way to the pickup area and find our bus. It is a small 8-seater, so not too uncomfortable for the journey northward. We were dropped off at our hotel at about 9 p.m., all hungry and tired from our adventure, but honestly happy to have made it. On getting proper internet access, we finally discover the magnitude of the disaster at Fort Lauderdale. There was a shooter that had assembled his gun in the baggage claim area and shot several people. This was a very sad day for Fort Lauderdale, but one that showed this state-owned airline called Caribbean Airlines could be very efficient in a crisis. Thank you, as always, for your podcast. Hoping to become a patron soon. Keep your airspeed up. Joseph.
Thanks, Joseph.
Thanks, Joseph.
Yeah, I remember that. That was crazy. I remember when that happened, the shooting in the baggage claim area. I remember they shut down that, and it was big news all over.
Is that the same year that Orlando had the camera explode?
No, I don't think
so. Was that the next year? Because we were going, that happened on our trip.
When the hell did we go? When did we go to Universal?
I don't remember. That's why I asked. I think
it was 2018.
Was it 2018?
It wouldn't be in my Frontier Tales list because we didn't take Frontier.
No.
Oh, did we?
We did.
Please hold.
No, we did take Frontier.
Yeah,
right.
We took Frontier.
Because I remember we had to call Frontier.
I'm pretty sure, because I know my mom was living in the condo at the time.
Yes. And we ended up staying at the condo when it happened.
It was before I started recording tail numbers.
Great.
Crap.
Well, anyways, yeah.
I think
that also happened.
Was it 2018?
Hold on.
No, it had to be 2017.
Maybe Frontier knows.
It had to be 2017. Because we went on that trip before we went on the cruise.
We did?
Yeah.
Huh.
Because I started going with you guys on trips in 2016, I think. Was it 16 or 17? Now I don't remember. Everything is blending together.
Facebook.
I know how I can look this up.
Facebook.
Google.
Facebook.
When did a camera explode in Orlando?
That's,
Because we were supposed to be there that day.
Using your big wrinkle brain there.
2017.
Ha! See?
Okay, there we go. The end of 2017.
Yes. I was like, sorry. It was November 2017. I'm like 90% sure. Anyway, sorry. That was a whole side tangent we didn't need to go on, but bad year for Florida airports. Because that happened at the beginning of 2017 at Fort Lauderdale, and that Orlando happened at the end. Although, the whole thing with the camera was just because the battery got too hot and it exploded.
Well, because they sent it through the thing.
Machine, yeah.
Yeah, and they thought it was a gunshot.
Yeah. I remember getting the cancelization on my phone and calling you guys and being like, it says our flight is canceled.
And we were like, crap.
Cancelization?
Sure. It was like, Google was like, hey, your flight's canceled. I'm like, what the hell you mean our flight's canceled? We have Universal tickets. Okay. You guys already know that. We've talked about that before, but All right. Next story from David. He says, still the He-Man macho civilian skydiving scuba diving pervert.
Thanks for that.
That's nice.
From the Mid-Atlantic Range. This story is entitled 85 through 86. Many people that I know passed from this earth in 1985 and 1986. Except for one, all passed in crashes of airplanes.
Oof. Ouch.
The first encounter made quite an impression. It was an Embry University hospital in the Grunzig?
Angioplasty
lab. Isn't that like the thing that they use in your heart when you have a... when you need to open an artery so it's... You don't have
it's a balloon to stretch open a narrowed or blocked artery.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, yeah. Ding, ding, ding. See, it's like I remember stuff I learned in school.
Sounds painful.
I didn't remember that.
I don't know why I remember that. I just...
Because your brother has a heart condition?
Yeah, probably. Or something similar to that. Okay, sorry. The Grunzig is rather famous in the cardiovascular world. He invented a type of heart catheter with a double lumen balloon at the tip. It worked for a small company that serviced the room, that is the biplane X-ray, AP and lateral, not a positive or negative stagger. Haha. I guess I don't really understand what you're talking about, but it's fine. And all the peripheral equipment. Grunzig was also a pilot, which will factor into this long-winded blather later. Great. My boss at the time was also a pilot. In fact, he was former Coast Guard, where he flew helicopters. In particular, the Sikorsky HH-52 Sea Guard. Fun fact, in TV shows and movies where the presidential helicopter is being flown, it is often a Sea Guard and not the H-3C King. If it has a single engine, it is the Sea Guard painted to look like the twin-engine Marine One.
Interesting. Makes sense.
You always know a lot of trivia, David. Okay.
I would not play trivia against you.
No, you totally win.
Which, slight side tangent, I won a work trivia thing recently that my boss put together, and I messaged him later. I'm like, there was a distinct lack of aviation trivia there. And he's like, yeah, that was for your benefit.
All right, continuing. Grunzig had just finished a successful angioplasty. He'd left the room, and while the circulating RN was injecting what is called a
heparin
lock into the patient's catheter sheath, the hemp lock is done to stop any clots from forming so they can reuse the sheath for an angiogram to make sure the angioplasty is still open and not occluded.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That my brother had to get one of those so that he wouldn't clot after his surgery.
That's why you know what an angioplasty is. There you go.
There you go.
I was allowed in to start working on one of the monitors not more than 3 feet from the patient. Somehow the contrast used to image vessels had gotten into the monitor and shorted something. Just after the administration of the heparin. The patient stopped breathing and went into respiratory arrest. I watched as she went from being pink to white. Roger, the circulating RN, used the ambu bag to try to resuscitate her. The cardiac arrest and Steve, an X-ray tech and former Green Beret, began chest compressions while Roger continued to bag her. It is true that ribs break if CPR is being done well. A code blue was called, and the crash team arrived seconds later. Steve quickly backed away so the crash team could go to work. Her gown was cut off, and cardioversion electrodes were placed on her chest. Then she was shocked. Her body arched up and flopped back down. No coherent cardiac rhythm. Epinephrine was injected into her IV. Another shock. No rhythm. Scalpel! They cut open her ribs diagonally from top to bottom, the ambu bag still being used to oxygenate her, then a retractor was placed and cranked open. There was her lung, bright pink like bubblegum, inflating and deflating in sync with the bag compressions. Her heart was still, more epi was injected directly into the myocardium, then Grunzig burst through the door. Wow, this is a lot.
This is not our usual story.
No. That's a lot.
Interesting, though. My mom is probably fully engaged here.
Oh, yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Sonora, Nick's mom, used to work in the ER.
Yes, she works in the medical field. She still works in a hospital.
She is an X-ray technician.
This stuff is very interesting to her.
She works in the building that my brother has to go to all the time to get his biopsies and stuff done. All right. Steve gloved Gerentzig, who then reached inside her chest and began squeezing her heart.
I've seen that on, like, episodes of Grey's Anatomy, and it weirds me out so much that you just start palpitating the heart.
Like, to make it pump. Gerentzig studied the monitor I had just fixed. He stopped compressions, and there was a flat line. Time, he asked. About 20 minutes, answered the circulator. I looked at her. She was white. White like paper, and flat. Unnaturally flat-looking, like a deflated balloon. Her eyes were closed. Her lips were purple, gash across her white skin. She's gone, said Gerentzig. I will talk to the family, and he mumbled something to Roger and Steve in his thick Austrian accent, finishing with, then bring the next patient. I was shocked at the lack of emotion. A wife, a mother, a human being had just died. Obviously, what I saw from behind that monitor left an undeniable memory in me. I will never forget seeing that lung pop up every time the bag was squeezed. By now, the crash team had removed the retractor and an LPN began sewing her closed with 2-0 silk. The patient was wrapped in a sheet in such a way that only her face was visible. Her skin was so smooth-looking and so unnaturally white. She was transferred to the empty lab next door, and her sobbing family was able to see her for a few minutes while the hospital lawyers and whatnot assembled. Then the next patient was rolled in, and like nothing had happened, Gerentzig entered with a dramatic, "How is my friend today?" The next patient, stoned on Valium, mumbled something, and lidocaine was injected into the groin where the cut-down was done. So started the year of death. That's horrifying.
Awful. Yeah, that's terrible.
Good Lord, David. Okay. A week later, Drew Thornton was found in a man's driveway in Tennessee. On September 29th, 1985, the Cessna Caravan with 17 aboard crashed. Then, on October 25th, 1985, which was a Friday, I was in the office with Bill. We were talking Star Trek, then airplanes, and Gerentzig came up in the conversation. Bill was trying to get Gerentzig to purchase a beach starship.
Wow, that's quite the airplane.
A beautiful twin prop pusher with a canard?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What's a canard?
It's the, there are little fins on the front, like on the nose of the airplane.
Hold on, you have to see
they
this.
They use for stability, and they're basically the elevators for the airplane.
We're looking up a picture.
Starship.
Oh!
Craziest looking airplanes.
It is, but it looks cool.
The canards are the things at the front.
Yeah.
And the canards on this airplane actually are fully mobile, so they move forward and
really?
Back. Like this. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's cool. Okay.
It looks like the... This is going to sound weird. It looks like the plane has whiskers.
Yeah, it does.
I like the next sentence. Gerentzig had been flying a V-tailed Dr. Killer.
Oh.
The beach bonanza.
Yep.
By the way, someone sent us a video after we covered that flight of what the tail looks like in flight. And I'm like, oh my gosh. No wonder they are Dr. Killers.
Yeah.
They are crazy. Like the vibrations the tail goes through is crazy. Sorry. Yeah. That was completely off topic, but...
That's and true. He survived that.
And he had survived that, yeah. Now he was in a Baron, a high-performance twin-engine airplane. Myron, my skydiving buddy and pro-corporate pilot, often flew a Baron and said it could be a handful like the Bonanza. The conversation drifted, and Bill was telling me about being shot at by smugglers while flying his unarmed single-engine Seaguard when the phone rang.
That's nice.
Bill answered, and his face went white. And he said, oh my God, and listened for another minute, then quietly said goodbye and hung up. He looked at me and said, Gerentzig's dead. Dr. Andreas Gerentzig, his wife, and two Dobermans were returning to Peachtree
DeKalb.
Yeah.
Airport near Atlanta in a beach Baron being flown by Gerentzig. He was on an ATC hold for traffic near Forsyth?
Forsyth.
Forsyth? Gosh, why do you guys have such weird town names? Georgia. When ATC gave him a vector to the northwest toward Peachtree.
Yes.
But the aircraft turned southwest. Grunzig reported an autopilot problem. Then he was again given a northwest vector and again turned southwest. Witnesses said they heard engines at high power and the Baron was nose down coming out of the clouds. They impacted at high speed. There wasn't enough intact wreckage to truly determine a cause. Grunzig was an original thinker who saved who knows how many lives via his catheter, but he was not my favorite person. To him, I was an uneducated 20-something lunatic who risked life and limb for a thrill and drove something raised from a junkyard and hardly ever fixed whatever was broken in the wretched lab of his. Which was all true, but he could have at least been a little sympathetic about it. My car was a 75 Mustang 2, had been totaled after the engine caught fire, but a really well-used motor was dropped in. The hood had been repainted, but the paint and body filler would not stick and kept falling off.
That's nice.
Making it look like it had been hit by a photon torpedoes?
Photon.
Photon torpedoes. Dude, that sounds like a... I'm sorry. It sounds like a hunk of junk. Anyway,
hot mess. Pictures.
If you have any, that would be great, David. We would love to see them. None of the wheels matched.
Awesome.
This just keeps getting better.
Yeah.
Either, and I had a special sticker to allow me to park where the important people park their Mercedes, BMWs, and the like. These were the days of the $200 car and a $2,000 parachute. In retrospect, the best time ever despite the fatalities. Since the caravan had happened so recently, I opted to skip Grunzig's funeral and whatnot. In fact, I have not been to a funeral since. Then came January 1986, the Challenger. I'm trying for brevity, so that will come later. Nicholas?
Okay. Another really short one. Come on, what the heck?
Well, this is Dave.
Yes, this is Dave. This is the other Dave.
Read the next line.
Who goes by they, them.
Thank you for normalizing pronouns, Dave, who uses they, them pronouns.
And now we will not misgender you.
Yeah. Yes.
You're using the proper pronouns. Sorry about that.
They're from Pembroke, Wales. Their story is 9/11. My 9/11 story saw me as a 19-year-old on my first proper backpacking trip. I was with my mate, Nick, and we found ourselves having a thali watching the sun go down over Ujjaipur in India.
Ooh, India.
I have friends from India. A friend?
Yes. We had a train to catch a couple hours later, so we were enjoying a beer. As we left the station, people hassled us into a shop. The beer worked. I needed something for my sister. I'd play. They weren't selling. They wanted us to share the tragic events unfold on TV. We watched for as long as we could and went for our train. In the era before smartphones, it was a long journey. I'm a passionate Welshman now, but I'm originally from London, and my family all lived there. Changing trains in Ahmedabad, that morning, we met a U.S. backpacker who asked us about our trip. She hadn't heard. We told her. I'll never forget her reaction. This was the era of international phone line centers and newspapers. There was no instant information. We felt awful. We had different trains to catch. A couple of weeks later, we flew home. I woke up somewhere over the Essex coast. I spent my childhood watching the planes looking up, trying to work out if they were to or from LCY, LHR, or STN.
I know two of those.
I know all three of them.
Okay, can you say them actually?
London City, London Heathrow, or Stansted. As we took the standard 27 approach into London Heathrow in the morning, London was blanketed in heavy mist. All I could see as I looked out was the top of Canary Wharf poking through into the sunrise. It was a beautiful but poignant sight. Though I'm not religious, I still prayed silently for everyone that day. It's kind of rough when you're in, you know something terrible is happening, but you can't get any information, you don't really know anything.
Yeah.
Like, I can relate to this in some way because this is kind of how I felt when the shooting was happening here in Aurora at the theater because I was over in Brussels. So I didn't have any way to like contact anybody or anything. And we were watching this on the news, watching things happen, but we really couldn't learn anything until the next day. And we really couldn't learn much of anything else until we got home, which was a few days later.
Well, and all of us here, like, we were all frantically reaching out to people, and I sent you a text, but I knew you wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, making sure no one was at the theater, and everyone was okay. My thought was, I mean, I don't, parent how you want, right?
Yeah.
But my mom, until I was, like, 18, would never have let me go to a midnight showing on a school night. Like, she wouldn't even let me go to a midnight showing, period, because she used to have to. At that point, our parents were still driving us places. So she's like, I'm not picking your ass up. So no, we're not going.
Yeah.
But we knew people in that theater.
Yeah, I knew several people.
Yeah. Our drum major from Nick and my freshman year was there. And she was pregnant at the time and I think miscarried her child.
Yeah, she miscarried that child.
Our friend Naomi, who actually made our logo for the podcast, was supposed to go that night. And didn't.
One of our Color Guard members was also there. She was in the second theater where the bullets were coming through the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Yana.
I forgot about that.
I had someone from middle school who was in my grade. I wasn't friends with him. He's kind of an asshole. But he was in the theater when it happened. So.
One of my fellow... I go to a Catholic church in the Aurora area. And one of my fellow parishioners was one of the people who was killed.
Yep.
So all of his memorial pictures are all his wedding pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right.
There's one of our stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of sad.
We were all asleep when it happened, but we all woke up to chaos.
I was awake. It was in the middle of the day.
Oh, shut up.
Where I was, and it was terrible.
Yeah. Our band director, because I was a section leader at the time, he frantically sent out a group text to section leaders, like, everyone check on your section.
Yeah. And they did. I got a text at 9 o'clock in the morning from my section leader asking me if I was okay. I'm like, I'm fine. I'm here. Hi. Maybe it wasn't on a school night because I think she texted me on a Saturday.
It was summer.
Oh, it was summer.
It was July 20th. Summer.
You're right. All right. Me again. Hi. This is.
I don't know why that was so funny.
I don't know. This is another one from David. He said, hey man, blah, blah, blah. And then he's from I Am Star Stuff, which everybody's star stuff. You're a star. Okay, sorry. Try to cut touch in here, guys. This is a tense episode. This one is called Challenger.
Thank you.
Which we did specifically say we wanted you to send a Challenger.
Yes, so. We did.
On a visit to the Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville, Alabama.
Which is where Brendan's from.
It is where Brendan's from. Back in 84 or early 85, I saw the IMAX movie The Dream is Alive, which was about the shuttle program. That's where I saw the second American woman in space, Dr. Judith Resnick. Which, by the way, she was one of the people on the Challenger.
Yeah.
For the first time, and I was in love. Yes, lust love. Or L-U-S-T love. She was an electrical engineer and flew on STS-41D and, unfortunately, STS-51L, the Challenger. I was traveling from Emory University Hospital to our office when I heard it on the car radio that the vehicle had exploded right after launching. This was the second time I felt that vortex spinning around in my gut, the first being when I learned of the caravan crash. When I got to the office, Bill was watching the news about it on his Commodore 64 computer. Sorry, that's old, but I can't even imagine. Which was an electrical engineer himself and had turned into a TV set. He sat silently and watched the footage of the explosion and felt sick, downright nauseated. There were interviews with various retired Apollo astronauts regarding what might have happened, but of course it would be a while before the O-rings on... Oh, should we say this? Spoiler alert?
Yeah, spoiler
alert. Most people
alert.
Know what happened.
Before the O-rings on the solid rocket boosters would be identified as the direct cause of the explosion. Astronaut John Young, who flew with Gus Grissom on the first Gemini flight, Gemini 10, with Mike Collins, Apollo 10 with Gene Sermon, and Tom Stafford, Apollo 16, with Ken Mattingly, and Charlie Duke. And of course, the first shuttle mission was chief of the astronaut office. Yeah. He had been very vocal about safety issues before Challenger had doubled down after Challenger. He was removed from the position of chief astronaut not long after Challenger. Was it retaliation from NASA? NASA says no. Young says yes. All these years later, it probably does not matter too much, but at the time, it was certainly odd timing. Developments in the investigation into the explosion were learned from magazines, newspapers, and the TV news. I would go find copies of Aviation Week and Space Technology at a library and read those for information, learning that the crew compartment was intact when it slammed into the Atlantic Ocean. Was particularly disturbing because the crew was alive up until that point. Beautiful, smart engineer Judith Resnick and the rest of the crew were alive before impact. Even now, I feel sick thinking about it. All those years later, I often wondered why an egress system of some kind had not been part of the design. But actually, I know why. Money. Shuttle, along with every other program at NASA, was underfunded and compromises had to be made. I would have been really good to have the crew module separation system, not unlike that in the F-111. Instead of ejection seats, the entire crew module separated from the aircraft and would land under the parachute. I've seen one of those modules at the Air Force Museum, so it could have been done. Instead, the most valuable commodity of a shuttle mission, the crew, was taken for granted for something for more masses to be carried in the orbiter's payload bay. Shuttle was an expensive, complex, and troubled program that suffered from politics. It also restricted NASA from anything other than a low Earth orbit, as far as manned missions. Initially, I was excited about the shuttle program, to the point I had made plans to travel to Florida to see a launch. But launches got canceled over and over and over, and I gave up on going. I regret not seeing a launch, or, of course, but at the time, they were just too unreliable to be certain about vacation time would result in seeing a launch. Still, I wish I had seen one, as they will never be repeated. The retirement of any vehicle that flew and flies no more is tantamount to extinction, and shuttle is extinct.
That is true.
Yep.
I promise we will cover the Challenger eventually. It will happen eventually. So, even if we don't have someone on to help us, we will just do it.
And the money thing? Yeah. We've talked about this many, many, many times. And
wait till that episode, because let me tell you.
Oh, I know.
When I figured out what actually happened with Challenger and what happened after, I was pissed. Absolutely livid. So, yes, you're right, David. You're 100% right.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Okay, this next story comes from our patron, Bob, in Ireland.
Ireland?
Ireland. Sure. Yes.
I think I can confidently say that.
Yes.
Bob is from Ireland.
He is from Ireland.
Well, I'm assuming it's that Bob.
It is that Bob.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
It was early on a Tuesday morning.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Can confirm. I was still in bed, enjoying a bit of a lie-in. I'd stayed up late the previous night, happily glued to the TV as the New York Giants took on the Denver Broncos in the first Monday Night Football of the new NFL season. Since moving to New York in January of 2000, I'd developed a healthy interest in what my American friends referred to as football.
Yes. See? Okay. Yeah. Right, Bob.
This is our Irish friend. Who's fantastic.
Good on you for watching the Denver Broncos as your local Denver Broncos
woot,
fans.
Woot,
woot. Woot, woot.
I usually had Mondays off from my Manhattan bartending job, and it had become something of a tradition. Monday nights were for beer, friends, and football.
Football!
That's not like a bad lifestyle.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
But this was early on a Tuesday morning. I should have sensed something was amiss when Dee, my normally quite level-headed housemate, started pounding on my bedroom door. Bob, get up. You're not going to believe what's happened. Someone's just flown a f***ing plane into the World Trade Center. It's all over CNN. Oh, please, I remember thinking at the time. So some idiot in a Cessna two-seater went off course. Big deal.
Listen, We watched a...
A lot of people believed
a
that.
A lot of people thought it was just like a Cessna or a general aviation plane. You're not the only one.
I rolled over and snuggled up, determined not to let her intrusion interrupt my beauty sleep. But she was not to be deterred. Bursting into my room, Dee shook me awake. She was wild-eyed, white-faced, and tearful, a far cry from her usual unfazable self. Something was very badly wrong. "Jesus, Dee, what is it? You look like you've seen a ghost," I said, instantly awake. She'd gotten my attention now. "Just come downstairs." She was gone. I stumbled out of bed, fell into a bathrobe, and clumped down the stairs to the TV room. What I saw on the television that morning is still difficult to comprehend or even think about 20 years later. There, in front of me, live on television, was the most chilling sight I have ever seen. Both towers of the World Trade Center were enveloped in billowing black smoke. Flames belched from monstrous holes that had been smashed in their sides. What I assumed to be debris, and later found out was people, plummeted to the ground from over 100 stories up. At this point, a gaggle of feelings rose to their feet and started arguing in my internal courtroom. Shock held the floor initially, after beating off advances from surprise, curiosity, and awe. Before long, fear and anger had joined forces and were swaying the room. Hope, presumably, was stuck in traffic and wouldn't be entering the debate for quite some time. Happiness had given up as a bad job and had slunk away to get a drink somewhere. I sank onto the couch and hardly moved for over an hour, watching as CNN played and replayed the tape of the second jetliner hitting the South Tower. I watched, dumbstruck, as one monolith after the other crumbled into dust less than 3 miles from where I sat. As the towers fell, a knife of ice sliced into me as I had a sudden realization. My cousin is down there somewhere.
Oh, no.
My cousin worked in the World Financial Center, a building so close to the South Tower that the two were linked by a raised walkway. I clambered over the back of the sofa and reached for the phone. I frantically dialed her number and was greeted by static. I felt fear wash over me. My heart was pounding in my ears. I dialed again. Nothing. Oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus.
But if you know anything about that day, phone lines were pretty much dead around
everywhere. Yeah, you couldn't get anywhere.
I was starting to get a little hysterical until Dee reminded me that all of the cell phone companies had their masts on the top of the North Tower. I couldn't expect to get any signal in that area. That calmed me a bit, but still didn't help me get a hold of my cousin. I chanced calling her family home in Ireland to see if she'd been in touch. It was the only thing I could think of. My aunt told me that she was alive, had called home from a payphone, and had gotten out of the area before the towers fell.
Oh my gosh!
I breathed out. I felt the urge to reach out and make contact with everybody I knew. I called my American cousin at her home in rural New Jersey. She's a gun-toting, meat-eating, Republican-voting patriot, so I was expecting a fairly extreme reaction from her. But her vitriol frightened me. Blazing with anger, she promised me through her tears that the U.S. would, quote, turn Afghanistan into a f***ing parking lot, end quote. I was shaking by the time I got off the phone. Then work rang. Are you going to come in at all today? You're a feckin' half hour late. I didn't know whether my manager Jimmy was having me on or being serious. Either way, it didn't help my mental state at that stage of the day. Jimmy, Manhattan is locked down, no one's getting in or out, and I'm in Queens. I can't get into the city, I managed to say. Sure, Jose is after arriving down from the Bronx. They're only saying that on the telly. Get in here, we're mobbed. He hung up. I got to Manhattan at about 4 p.m. It was surreal. A constant stream of rescue vehicles screamed their way down 7th Avenue. There was dust everywhere. The southern end of the city was engulfed in a massive black cloud of it. People walked the streets empty-eyed, seeing but not seeing. It was shock on an enormous scale. But the worst, the very worst part, the part you don't often hear about, was the smell. New York reeked of burnt paper, singed hair, and death. I went to work. Nothing could have prepared me for the scene in Mustang Sally's when I walked in. As Jimmy had stated, the bar was packed to the rafters and every TV was tuned to CNN as new information was updated constantly. Many of the punters were covered in that now familiar gray dust, having made the trek up from the financial district. But nobody spoke a word. The bar was eerily silent. The usual friendly chatter that made up the background noise at work was conspicuous in its absence, and it frightened the crap out of me. To this day, I do not remember a single thing about working that night in Sally's. I remember arriving and leaving, but nothing of the 10-hour shift in between. On the way home, a lot of subways were out of action because of damage to the tracks downtown, including the one train I usually took up to Times Square to catch the 7 out to Queens. I walked the 14-block journey instead. There's always great life on the streets of Manhattan. No matter what time of the day or night, you're guaranteed to be surrounded by bustling New Yorkers. I walked the busiest stretch of the busiest avenue in the city that night without seeing a single soul. The 7 is the most used train in the entire New York subway system, ferrying countless thousands every day all through the night. Getting a seat is normally out of the question. I'd become used to standing for the 40-minute ride to Woodside. That night, I had the whole train to myself. I trudged from the subway station over to 64th Street and let myself into the house. I was physically, mentally, and emotionally destroyed. I managed to haul myself up the stairs and collapsed onto my bed. The tears came thick and fast, as they had been threatening to do for most of the day. At some stage, I fell asleep. It was early on a Wednesday morning.
Damn. I had no idea you lived in New York.
Yeah. Nope. That's crazy. That's crazy that you were
there.
I mean, yeah. Ugh. Sorry you had to go through that.
I can't even imagine.
It's rough. Anybody that was there, sorry you had to go through that.
I have family that lives in New York, and I remember my dad and my grandmother desperately trying to reach my great aunt, and couldn't get through. There was just no way. So, yeah. Scary stuff.
Yeah.
All right. One last depressing story, and then we have a little bit of a not-so-depressing story. This is also from David. He says he's whatever. Okay, cool. And he says he's from a comet that met the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. Which, like...
We get it.
Sure.
Yep.
His story says 9/11, but I'm pretty sure Ven was what he meant to write, because the B and the V are right next to each other.
However, 11. I will also say...
9/11.
I come from a Filipino family, and that is how we say our V's, is 9/11.
It's also very common in Spanish. 9/11.
So, but you guys know the gist.
Yeah.
20 years ago... On September 11, 2001, my mom turned 60 and had cataract surgery. I had just started a new job and was assisting with an arterial graft surgery. I had given up on an aviation career by now after layoff with the airlines. The surgeon, a Chinese guy whose name is pronounced Jinhua, got to the OR first and turned the stereo to local public radio station. That played classical music all day. Had me or anyone else gotten there first, it would be an oldies rock station. We had just taken the graft out of the saline solution when the music stopped and the news person reported what was happening in New York. For the third time in my life, I had got that spinning vortex feeling in my gut and knew the world had changed forever. I'm going to get emotional, guys. Holy crap.
I already started almost crying. I know. The last one. Mm-hmm.
At the time, I did not know how it would change, but that it would. We proceeded with the surgery. Can't really stop something like that. No, not really.
No.
Can't really stop surgery. But it was quiet. Just the sound of the music interspersed with news updates. The sound of the ventilator, pulse ox, and little else. An occasional take care of the little bleeder there, or move the... Weight liner? A little higher. But no chit-chat. We finished, and after paperwork, we all left for the day. It was like the world had stopped moving. The skies were empty, devoid of anything flying but birds. Businesses closed early. Everyone seemed to go into their houses, apartments, and condos, and parked in front of the TV set to CNN.
Why was everyone watching CNN? Were there no other news networks?
Well, at the time...
There were, but...
Things have changed a lot, but at the time, CNN was reliably that news station that was always on. Things have changed a lot, but it was... I mean, in all of the airports, CNN was in all of the airports. I mean, they were on all the TVs in all the airports above all of the waiting areas. This has since changed, what with the advent of phones and social media and things like
that.
Yeah,
sorry, I just don't... I know we did not watch CNN in my household, which we'll get to later.
For us, moving, like, traveling and things like that, CNN is reliably just everywhere, all the time. And at the time, it was very prevalent, so everybody was watching CNN.
Yeah. I was simultaneously happy and not happy that I wasn't on a ramp somewhere. Sometimes I think I left my heart at an airport or drop zone, since the airline work was the most fun I'd ever had, quote, at work. And skydiving was the most fun I'd ever had ever in all of my short yet adventure-filled life. He had the most fun when he was skydiving.
Yeah.
But by God, that was living at its finest. All senses were completely turned on, and everything, the colors, the smells, the tactile feelings, and emotions were there in the present and totally focused on doing something completely mad yet so necessary. But I was out of it by now. Financially, I could not afford it. Health-wise, I was on meds that took some of that very necessary alertness away. Truth is, I could not test my reflexes anymore. The same ones that got me down safely when I had a malfunction below 900 feet. I began to look to the sky in frustration. When news of the Pentagon being hit came out, I saw some names on the passenger list that I recognized due to their having flown the F-A Crusader. Admiral Bud Flagg was a victim. He was a high-time F-A Crusader pilot with 2,000-plus hours and Vietnam vet. Captain John Yamnicki was also aboard American Airlines 77, a Korean veteran who flew 3 combat tours in Vietnam. Both were long retired from active service, yet still were contacted regularly by DOD to work on projects. Another casualty of 9/11 was simply watching planes come and go at airports and military bases. No longer could anyone go to Atlanta and hike down a concourse to watch the airplanes come and go. Near Dobbins FAB or Air Force Base, there is a cemetery on Windy Hill Road, just after crossing Highway 41. There is a clock, as in an earthen clock, on the ground that had this great place to see the ramp and runway at Dobbins. After 9/11, people would call the cops and report suspicious activity. The arguments over being able to watch and take pictures of airplanes became heated at times. Plane spotters were bullied off and out of the best watching spot around for Dobbins. Because of 9/11, I no longer fly commercial unless absolutely necessary. 9/11 had taken the fun out of the experience for me. One time, while being screened, a small safety pin the cleaners had left alongside the zipper of my pants almost got me strip searched as it kept triggering the wand. Nope, I'll just drive, thanks, and keep aviation as a hobby. And I'll hope like hell we never have another 9/11.
I agree. And yes, it's terrible. And I remember, I mean, I was really young, but my dad worked for United, so we spent a lot of time traveling and such, and I remember, like, when my grandparents would come and go, we could just walk right up to the gate, watch their airplane pull in, or see them off, and that is by far and away not possible anymore.
Nope.
I didn't fly until I was 12, so right. I never knew changed. Anything before 9/11.
Same.
Right. Okay. To change things up a little bit.
Yeah.
Thank you.
from the somber note that
yes.
This episode is.
We have one more. And it is also from David.
Thank you for sending in a funny story.
But this one is titled Funny Work Story. Hello, guys. I spent several years as a vet tech at the American Cardiovascular Research Institute. Wow, you have quite the career, David.
You have done it all.
So much stuff that you have done.
I feel like I've done a lot of things, and then you make me feel like I am lazy. I've done nothing.
I've done absolutely nothing.
Yes, we did use animals in the research. Mostly pigs, also rats. Pigs are disturbingly human-like regarding their organs and how they look. They have a mediastinum like humans. They're susceptible to malignant hyperthermia, also like humans. So we did cardio research using pigs. Something else, if not for animal research, I would either be dead or wish I was. Not kidding, I have 50 different diseases, syndromes, and conditions, and my quality of life is livable thanks to animals. So I made sure they did not suffer, had good pain meds, good enrichment, and lived good lives. They were born as lab animals, so we could know the physical and genetic history, and I always sat with them off and on during the day and let them get to know me. Having said that, we supported the Da Vinci Surgical Robot Training Program. Wow. We had a doc flying in from California to work on prostate and heart models, so we had to get a human cadaver, as pigs do not have a prostate gland. We ordered a male torso from a funeral home that supplied such things, and the day before the scheduled training, we got the wrong one. We were supposed to get a fresh one. Instead, we got one frozen like a butterball turkey.
Oh, I was like, what do you mean?
Did you have to put it that way?
The robot lady who worked for Intuitive the parent company for Da Vinci, said to fill the cooler it came in with warm water to thaw overnight. The next morning, we could smell that thing in the parking lot. Oh my effing God, it stunk. The office staff were gagging. They had to get that white stuff to put under the nose.
I'm pretty sure that white stuff has, like, essential oils and stuff
in
it.
Yeah. So me and a guy named Bob had to get the thing out of the cooler and into the robot room. I put on every bit of PPE possible. Hat, mask, long surgical gloves, a gown, everything. Bob just wore a hat and exam gloves.
Good on you, I guess.
Yeah. Bob is a weird guy. We go into the room the cooler is in. There it is, floating there. Stinking badly. Cindy, the robot lady, immediately threw up. Me and Bob were holding our own, but it was tough. We parked a cart next to the cooler, and we reached into the soup.
I need a moment.
So gross.
I'm just picturing the TikTok now. Good soup.
Ew.
You never seen that?
No!
Oh, it's all
Stop
over the
talking!
Place. Anyways. Got a hold of the shoulder and a butt cheek and lifted. Suddenly, we were just holding fat, skin, and hair, and it fell back into the cooler, and it splashed. A blob of that soup made a perfect ballistic arc right into Bob's mouth.
Ew.
I can't!
And Bob turned his head and projectile vomited.
Okay,
I'm gonna projectile vomit. That's disgusting.
Cindy was on her knees now and hugging the sink, puking in it. Bob was now kind of green and dry heaving as he was out of vomit. I laughed hysterically at Bob.
Maybe you should have worn a mask. Get good, Bob.
Wear a mask before it was cool.
Yeah. We finally got it together and drained the cooler into a floor-level sink in the janitorial room. Took the poor thing out of the cooler and into the robot room. Bob gargled with a bleach solution, and I got a can of Lysol and offered it to Bob as a breath freshener. No sense of humor, that Bob. Plus, let me know if the crap I write sucks. I honestly can't tell. Nope, they're pretty great.
No, they're pretty great, dude.
You're a fantastic author and storyteller and...
Pretty
God.
Sure we've said that before to you, but...
Weird as the stories are, we love them.
Yes, and everyone else does.
Yes, the more I hear from people that listen, like, in person, they're like, oh, God, I love Dave's stories. So
we all
keep,
do.
Keep telling
you're
us your stories.
Tell my mom stories, because she doesn't listen, but I'm like, I got to tell you this story. This is just...
this guy.
The one about, like, the cows.
Oh, God.
And the one about landing naked in the middle of a little game. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So 9/11, where was I? I was supposed to go to kindergarten that day.
So was I.
And so was Miranda. Miranda actually went.
I don't know. I don't remember. I'm pretty sure I went to school that day.
I did not. And I couldn't figure out why. I asked my dad and he's like, nope, none of you guys went to school. I didn't go to work. We sat in front of the TV and watched. The thing I remember most about that day was watching 9 News, which is still one of the largest local Denver area news networks, and watching animations of the crash. They didn't show a lot of the actual footage, and I'm grateful for that. And I was eating Fruit Loops. I will always remember eating Fruit Loops.
Mm-hmm. I was at home, and my grandparents were in town from Brussels, and they had to stay a little longer because... flights weren't going.
They can't go anywhere yet.
And they were in town for Nick's birthday, because his birthday is the 13th.
Yeah. So, the only thing we can figure is that I was at home because my grandparents were there. But I wasn't at school that day. And I was watching the news with my parents, and I mean, watched for hours and hours and hours, of course, because this was the craziest thing ever. And I just remember how much it changed my dad's job after 9/11 and everything related with us traveling and... like, even though I was young, I still remember all of this, and I remember all the changes. Like, I still got to see all of these changes happen in all these different ways. Like, I used to go into my dad's work where he was working on big airliners, and then they changed that. People couldn't go in anymore. Like, only the maintenance people. And on top of that, like, then they... I remember at Indianapolis at the old terminal, you used to be able to just walk right through. If you were traveling, you had to go over to the right... and go through the security line. And then otherwise, it was a big giant hallway straight through to the concourses you could see from the main terminal area. And they just had basically a TSA person on either side. And you would just walk right through if you didn't have a bag. And so we would always go over there, wait at the gate, whether, you know, family was leaving or coming or whatever. And I remember that after 9/11, they then put up a wall right there. and then they expanded security and made you have to go through security. And it's just surreal to kind of see all these changes happen, even if I was young. I mean, it's, you know, it especially affects your childhood. It's like the way you remember things, and then the way you remember things changing, and it's just so weird.
Well, we were really, really young at the time, which is probably why I can't remember anything, because I was 5 when it happened. But I need to ask my dad, because if anyone would remember, because my mom doesn't, if anyone would remember, my dad would remember what happened that day, because he was at home with us. But I don't remember, honestly. My mom probably went to work, and she heard about it on the news somewhere. Someone at her work probably told her. But she went to work early, so my dad was the one home with us that day. So I honestly can't remember what happened. I probably just went to school, would be my guess, but...
My dad lost his job ultimately because they shut down the facility and laid everybody off from his facility. And a handful of people, I think, got to keep their jobs if they were willing to move, but they closed that maintenance facility in Indianapolis for the airline he worked for. Changed a lot of things.
You already said what airline it was.
Yeah, it changed a lot of things, and it's just crazy how reaching that event was.
If you are listening to this and you were not alive while this happened, and you want to know what it was like, we watch a documentary.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah,
and you have to buy it or rent it. But
it's so worth it.
It's completely worth it. You will never see anything better about 9/11 because it's more real than anything else.
Let me pull up the full name of it.
It's real quick. Quite literally just called 9/11.
Well, it has a subtitle.
It does. Give us a second. We watched it on 9/11 this year because we were like, we should do that because it's the 20th anniversary this year. But the first time Christy and I watched it, we were at Nick's mother's house. And it's surreal.
It's called 9/11, the Filmmaker's Commemorative Edition. Pretty sure.
That is the right one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was originally just called 9/11. And it's two French brothers that...
They were originally just making a documentary about what it's like to become a fireman. They were following
in
this...
New York City, yeah.
And they were following this particular new fireman as he went through being a probationary firefighter. And he, for most of his fire career, like, he hadn't had to really encounter fire. He went through all the training. The only fire that he had really had prior was, I think it was
a car fire.
It was a car fire. And even then, like, his fellow firemen were like, that's nothing. That's not a real fire yet. And then 9/11 happened.
And one of the brothers had been just practicing filming because it had been the other brother that had been using the camera. So this other brother was practicing filming, and he was just going on the crew with on runs for weeks, just practicing. And they went on a routine gas leak check run in the middle of, like, a New York street. And he got one of the only pieces of footage of the first plane hitting the first tower.
Because they heard it overhead, and he just turned his camera upward
just
at the
in
right time
to see it.
Yeah. It also, I know that Netflix did a short documentary series on it, too, called Turning Point.
It has that piece of footage in it.
It does.
From him.
They put that piece of footage in there. And I liked the Netflix one, too, because it kind of explains to you...
The backstory.
The backstory. Like, why 9/11 happened.
Because I didn't know any of it.
I didn't know it either. So.
And we happened to take U.S. history at a time when that wasn't in the textbooks yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of it was still playing out.
So.
Yeah. But if you are curious, those two are pretty good forms of information on what it was actually like. Now, we don't have anything about the Pentagon. There is an air disasters episode. It's season
10,
episode 2.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It's either season 10 or season 11.
No, it's definitely season 10.
If it's season 10, it's episode 2, because Tenerife is episode 3. I'm like 99.5%.
I'm glad y'all know this, because I definitely just don't.
It was the second episode I'd ever watched. That's why, episode.
So they have it's called the Pentagon Attack, and they talk about the attack on the Pentagon in air disasters, and I've watched it. It kind of describes what was happening, what was going on. So if you feel like you need to figure, if you weren't in the United States or you don't really know what that entailed or you weren't alive yet, because some of you listening may not have been, you can go check those out for more information.
Yep. All right. Any other big events that we were alive for? Obviously, we talked about the Aurora Theater shooting, which kind of hits home for us.
We were also alive during the Columbine.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't remember that one. That was a long time ago.
It was. 99 was a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's really all the stuff. I mean, we were alive for what happened in Paris, the bombing in Paris.
I don't remember where I was for that, though.
The London bombing, things like that.
Yes. You were for the one in Brussels.
Oh, we can talk about that one.
Yeah, we were in Europe at the time, actually, and we were supposed to maybe be traveling to Brussels that day, and thank goodness we didn't.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, it would have been spring of 2017. Nick and I, along with my family, we had gone to Ireland because my brothers were still in our high school marching band, and they got to play in St. Patrick's Day parades that year, which was really important because it was a big anniversary. Was it 2017?
I don't know.
Maybe it was 2016.
Might have been 2016.
No, it was 2016 because it was my first year of college.
Yeah, 2016. My bad. I'm so sorry. And Nick and I were thinking of splitting off from the group and going to go see his uncle in Brussels. We ultimately decided not to do that. It wasn't really financially feasible for either of us. But we were in the airport in Dublin getting ready to leave, and
I started getting news updates about...
Well, and announcements came over the PA systems that there had been a bombing in the departures area.
Yeah.
Departures or arrivals?
Departures.
Of Brussels airport.
Yeah. And, I mean, I know that airport up and down. I've been all over that airport. And it's, yeah, that was horrifying when that happened. I was also on another story, crazy thing.
Oh, yeah.
I was in Europe, and I was flying back from Europe one time. And this was, you know how you can't carry liquids on a plane?
Yeah.
That was because there were threats against planes traveling from Europe to the United States for these liquid bombs, where they would basically bring two water bottles of different liquids. They would mix them together in the bathrooms and then blow up the plane. That was the plan anyways. And it came out the morning that I was traveling from Brussels back to the United States that they had apprehended like 39 people across like 14 different airports in Europe that morning who were attempting to do just that. And hence, you can't bring liquids on a plane. But I'll tell you that that little 8-hour journey was dead silent the whole time. That was kind of horrifying. You spend 8 hours in the air not having a clue about, like, you just heard this before you got on the plane.
Then you get on the plane.
Then you get on the plane. Anybody gets up to go to the bathroom, you're like, where are you going? What are you doing?
What are you doing? Why are you doing that? Sit down. Yeah.
Hold it.
Yeah. Wait till we get off.
Obviously, everything was fine. And yeah. Nothing actually happened to any airplanes because investigators did a good job. But you can't bring liquids on a plane anymore.
And I covered in a Miranda-sode why you have to take off your shoes.
Yep.
At security.
Yep.
That's American 66, I think.
Oh, how things have changed.
Okay, well, thank you for tuning into this somber episode.
Yes. Hope you enjoyed it. We don't really have
a theme for next month?
October. Spooky stories are appreciated.
Or any story, of course.
Yeah, so send us any story you want.
If you've got a theme suggestion, though,
let us know.
Send it to us.
For October or November.
I like the spooky stories.
Yeah, if you have spooky stories, high key, appreciated.
I'm even tempted to say not necessarily related to aviation because it's spooky season.
Spooky season. I was going to tell you guys tomorrow. I'm like, guess what, guys? Good luck.
It's spooky season.
It's spooky season.
We love the paranormal.
So, yeah, if you have a paranormal story that doesn't really have to do with aviation, feel free to tell us.
I'm in the mood.
I'm high key interested. Because, I mean, we've told a lot of our stuff from the past, but creepy stuff.
Creepy, spoopy.
Scoopy?
Scoopy?
I don't know. I was trying to do alliterate. It didn't work. All right. Thank you for tuning in, friends. I hope you enjoyed this listener episode. And again, if you have any, you know, ideas on future episode themes, let us know. You will get a shout out. This shout out was for Megan, our patron, who asked us to do this, so...
Also, hopefully you got a duck.
Yeah.
Or three.
Or three that we signed.
Hopefully that has arrived.
If you want ducks.
Let us know. We have a crap ton of rubber ducks.
We will sign them. We will send them to you.
And I will cry at the amount of money that it takes to send it over the ocean, but I'll do it anyway.
Just don't jump up and down all at once because we might not be able to afford to do it to everybody. But if you really want one, we will
message us, email us. We'll let you know. All right. Thank you. And we will catch all you guys in the next episode, whatever that may be.
Keep your speed up.
Thank you to everyone who submitted their story for this episode.
We are your hosts, Nick, Miranda, and Christy.
Our theme music was composed by Miranda and performed by all three of us, plus Leo.
Our logo is by Naomi from Not a Monster, Not a Boogeyman.
To submit your aviation story, go to hardlandingspodcast.com.
And check us out on social media. Catch you next time.